Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Bassist Christian McBride brings his project, quote, Exploring Social Justice Movements from the Past to the Present, to Washington, D.C.'s Kennedy Center Concert Hall on Friday, February 4th, to begin Black History Month. The Movement Revisited, a musical portrait of four icons, was released in 2020 on Mack Avenue Records. From the liner notes, program highlights impassioned speeches from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who delivered a speech less than a mile from the Kennedy Center at the historical March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, Rosa Parks, Malcolm X, and Muhammad Ali. The project also includes a short tribute to President Barack Obama. For more information, kennedy-center.org. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tonight, Thursday, January 27th, through Saturday, January 29th, bassist Ben Wolfe's Music for Nanette. And on Sunday, January 30th, vocalist Margot Sergent with the Piaf Experience, a Parisian cabaret revival. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club, guitarist John Pizzarelli's Swing 7. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. The Bill Charlop Trio performs at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center this Saturday, January 29th, with a salute to conductor Leonard Bernstein. And February 3rd through February 5th, saxophonist Ravi Coltrane will be in residency at the PAC. For more information, njpac.org. This Friday and Saturday night, January 28th and 29th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Fred Hirsch Trio performs for two sets. And on Sunday, January 30th, Latin Jazz with Dave Schumacher and Kubaye for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. And now for new releases. Pianist Pete Malinverney's Pete Malinverney Plays Leonard Bernstein on Planet Arts Recordings. The group Songgon self-titled release on Jed Music. And baritone saxophonist Dave Sewelson's Smooth Free Jazz on Mahakala Music. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger.
Shuffling and shuffling down, rambling, scrambling and heading for town, hustling, bustling and buzzing around, happily waiting at the station.
My guest is Joe Bebko, associate editor of the publication The Syndicated Times. Located in Utica, New York, the Syndicated Times is, quote, the only monthly newspaper focused on hot jazz, ragtime, and swing. It's available in print and online and has a Facebook presence. Thank you, Joe, for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Glad to be here.
So which artists are you listening to and reviewing at the moment?
There's two real hotspots for traditional jazz right now. One is New Orleans and one is New York City. So people listening to this are close enough to see a lot of folks in New York City. And I've picked some of those. There's a couple overlapping groups of people. And of the albums I really like, last year there was an album on Dot Time Records that was Evan Artson Counter Melody. And it was kind of they really put a lot into this album, and it was a best of sort of people in the community. Catherine Russell was on a couple tracks. Catherine Russell gets everywhere, but it was Evan Artson, his brother. Charlie Halloran came from New Orleans, one of my favorite trombone players right now. He has a bent for calypso and things like that, and that's what his next album's about. But he came up from New Orleans to record trombone on that album. There was John Eric Kelso, who you can see around, one of my favorite trumpet players in New York, will be in a lot of bands. So a lot of these people you can see around playing several nights a week in New York City in different outfits. And a couple that I really like in whatever they do that most people probably haven't heard of yet is Miss Mabel and Charlie Judkins. Charlie Judkins is like an amazing ragtime and barrel house stride piano player, and Miss Mabel is Lauren Sanzerac, and she they just together as a pair, they're absolutely amazing. And even before the last couple years, they were making amazing duo stuff for YouTube and whatnot, but obviously that got a lot bigger in the last couple years. But when you see them out in New York City, it's usually billed as Miss Mabel and the Jazz Age Artists. And they're playing Birdland on the 20th of February. Mm. There's probably some gigs ahead of that, but I know about that one. So they're just a knockout group out of New York City in any form you can find them. They have a new album out that is, you'd probably go to missmabel.com to find it, because it isn't even really out yet. I've heard it in music. With a full band, Jerome Blind Boy Paxton and Ryan Nalepka and a couple other people are on that album with them. It's Cares Will Be Forever Ended is the name of the album. You probably have to go to her actual website to find it at this point.
Come out here in the moon.
Could you name some of the musical artists who have led you to write about this type of jazz and improvised music?
You mean modern or historic? Historically, when I got into this kind of music, because I started collecting LPs as a teenager, somehow that turned into tracing back all the music from Bob Dylan's first album when he did all covers and finding all those blues singers. And somehow that got me into records. And very quickly, that got me into like dime store jazz labels, like just dance band. Like, so I'm a teenager listening to like late 20s dance bands, the kind of records you can find like for 50 cents at the Salvation Army at the time. So, and so I had to learn from that. Like, you're not going to find, as a teenager, you're not stumbling across like the really cream of the cream stuff. You're finding the dance band stuff, but I just loved it and loved the mood and learned from there. And now it's been another 30 years on top of that. So, and then I got fortunate enough to land in this position. The Syncopated Times was it started as the West Coast Rag. It was just a festival paper in the late 80s before the internet, if you wanted to know about events, you needed a physical paper that told you about events. And it was that kind of thing. And more now, we do a mix of history and everything else. And obviously, we still have event listings, but a lot of that is easier to find online now. So our focus is more on covering the current artists that are making traditional jazz, ragtime, and swing, and offering a venue for historical pieces, new research on artists of the last 100 years, honestly, the revival as well as the originals.
And the Syncopated Times, not only can you read it online or get it in print, you have a listening component.
Yes, that was about a year ago. We started Syncopated Times Radio. And it's syncopated, and you can link to it off any page on the website. And it's a 24-hour streaming, pre-programmed. It's a collection of primarily radio programs that play locally or podcasts, but it's fed into, it's a radio stream. So you know at noon every day, you'll get the same show. And it's actually been beyond our wildest expectations, how well that's been received. And people just put it on as their background every day, because it's programmed like NPR or anything else, rather than in an age where you can hear whatever you want, whenever you want. It's nice to have a curated radio show with somebody actually sharing some information about stuff with you, which I'm sure you agree with. And so it's Jeff Bresler, who has hosted his own show for years, basically just does that. The entire operation is him. He coordinates with everybody, programs it all, runs it as and there's 20 or 30 different shows throughout the week on that channel. So
yeah, I've enjoyed listening to it. You know, speaking of radio, the Jazz Programmers List is an online discussion list made up of jazz radio programmers like myself, musicians, publicists, and others. Recently, someone brought up the issue of incorporating early jazz recordings into our playlists.
Yeah.
No one disagreed with it. Some programmers already do it. Others not so much, as they have a set format, right. New releases or avant-garde and free jazz, etc. What is your commentary when it comes to the airtime given to playing traditional jazz and improvised music?
I think one of the ways to go about it that would help would be to cover the living current artists playing and fit that in. Because one of the issues you're going to have if you're trying to fit in King Oliver or something is the recording quality isn't what listeners expect now. Like the actual, there's been some good reissues, but it just doesn't fit in some of the flow. So there's plenty of still swing era and big band shows all over like AM stations. But if you get to actual like 20s jazz and the real history stuff, you get some of that. So yes, you need to mix in that. But there are a lot of artists to be found that have great music in the style And I would try to show some of the living traditional jazz going on.
Yeah.
It would be, I think there's a market. You can listen to and enjoy traditional jazz and swing and all that without having a jazz education. It helps. It makes you enjoy it more the more you learn about anything. But as far as radio programming, most people are going to be like, that swings. Like that's hot. I like it. And I think it's a good way to introduce people to later forms of jazz on your show is to draw in a wider audience that isn't, I don't know, it's just approachable music in general, even though it can be very moving music and everything else. Part of it in the last 50 years or so is that jazz education got stuck into kind of the same cycle that more or less ignored anything before the 40s. And so a lot of the younger players we cover, some of them obviously they went to school for jazz and whatnot, and now they're teachers and they're doing all that. But a lot of them were just nurtured within traditional jazz clubs around the country. Their like father was a player or whatever, and now they're making their way in New York or New Orleans, and they were nurtured within an actual hand-to-hand jazz culture that's gone back for 70 years. And a lot of those revival era players played with people from the 20s and 30s. And I talk to 80-year-old men all the time that have played with amazing early people. But when it's traditional jazz, it still is a tradition. It's not like you're not going to school to play like King Oliver anywhere in the world. You have to like learn that hand to hand from somebody else. Probably affects what gets played on the radio. So. Mm.
Yeah. Well, Joe, let me ask you another observation. Mm-hmm. And this is about the journalist Ted Gioia's recent article on Substack titled, "Is Old Music Killing New Music?" According to MRC data, which formerly is known as the Nielsen SoundScan, providing music sales data, quote, "Old songs now represent 70% of the U.S. music market," and, quote, "songs released in the last 18 months get classified as new in the MRC database." Music doesn't have a long shelf life. It really doesn't. So what about new artists playing old music? From your purview, how are jazz and improvised music fans embracing old music through new artists?
Well, there's an advantage there somewhat, because a lot of the material is in the public domain at this point and whatnot. So you can avoid hangups as far as getting your recording into movies and whatever else by avoiding that. There are a lot of these artists are creating, most albums will have two or three new tracks and the rest being classics, because everyone wants to hear the classics. But if anything, I think it's an advantage for traditional jazz. I understand why a streaming service is going to rely on established things and not work in new stuff. If you put a Spotify playlist and they know this one is going to keep people watching and it's all an algorithm, like they know you better than you, and they put it out there. So I just really don't know the answer for that, but I think traditional jazz does have an advantage because we do rely on a set canon of like traditional of classic songs that you can hear 50 different artists play over the course of your life, and that's a song that you like. So I guess that's an advantage.
Besides, the thank you for reviewing my release, what do you hear from players about, what kind of airplay and or attention they're getting in the media?
Well, there's almost none in traditional jazz. Like you can get, locally, and if you're in Minneapolis or something, you can get coverage in your local paper and maybe local radio or whatever. But there isn't really any promotion out there. The reason I loved that Counter Melody album on Dot Time Records was it was actually on a record label, which is not very common for traditional jazzers. Almost everything is self-released. They'll produce some CDs for shows and occasionally LPs if it's a really big one. But primarily it's downloads from Bandcamp for most of these bands. Most of the current bands are, they're on a budget. They know there isn't a huge demand for albums, and so it's on there and streaming. And some of them end up on Spotify and all that, but that's not making anybody any money. So albums are a tough business. It's a live music market, and that hasn't been good for the last couple of years.
True.
Yeah. So they're very happy to get a review and any attention, but I try to make the reviews. It's not just about the album. It's an opportunity to give the band a profile that reaches a national audience instead of just their local paper. It's like pretty much when someone's covered in our paper, it's their chance to meet. If they're in Minneapolis, it's their chance to be exposed to jazz fans all over the country.
Well, Joe, as we come to the end of this interview, I'd like to know, what releases are you looking forward to reviewing?
Well, there's one, but it's sort of two. The Secret Six, which is their actual name out of New Orleans, they started, while New Orleans was in lockdown, they started going to the park to play together and do the whole socially distanced play in the park thing. And it's the group is made up of nobody that anybody but me would ever really have heard of. They're sidemen in all these local traditional jazz groups in New Orleans. None of the name players in any of those groups, but they've been, they started jamming, doing these park jams to keep themselves busy all through COVID. They recorded a great album last year. They just sent me a new one that is called There's Something in My Eye and it is You. And so it's the Secret Six. And if you search like Secret Six New Orleans, you can probably find them on Bandcamp. But they have a new album coming out sometime in February that I need to review for the March issue. And they have another album coming out later this spring with Ed Pulser, who is a now 84-year-old trumpet player. His son, Ben, is one of the primary people that really started this. If you've heard of Tuba Skinny in New Orleans and like
I have.
The later New Orleans stuff, that whole thing. I lived in New Orleans in the early 2000s before the storm. And the street culture there then was focused on this kind of Appalachian, whatever, hillbilly sound on the street players. Like a lot of them were punk rock kids coming through. Ben Pulser, Ed Pulser's son, had been playing in New York City in the parks with the Loose Marbles, was a group that played New York City parks. He moved to New Orleans, started the Loose Marbles there, which was basically like a jazz training camp for some of the kids on the street. And that's where Biscini kind of grew out of. And after the storm, when everybody went down to the city, like all these kids from around the country, that's when this new traditional jazz revival in New Orleans really got going. And a lot of the bands come back to Ed Pulser's son. He's a traditional jazz player going back like 50 years or something. And he will be on an album with them later this spring as their guest star. And he'll also be appearing with them at Jazz Fest and French Quarter Fest later this year. So the Secret Six is someone to look into.
For more information, syncopatedtimes.com. And now for some music. We'll be right back.
struggle. You know how Sisyphus always be pushing that boulder up a hill? Never getting nowhere, mm-mm. Never getting nowhere. Now we be finding ourselves marching. Wordless with our shouts. Wordless with our shouts. They have stolen our words. They have stolen our words. Now all meaning is in jeopardy. Our visions, and visions have been replaced with madness. Compassion and forgiveness have been relegated to the kindergarten. Struck down with improper education, to be struck down with proper education, to be struck down with improper education.
There's a light in the valley, one that you cannot see. It is shining for you and for me. When the road gets too long, that heavy burden too strong, just leave it.
Please.
just only believe.
From drummer Marcus Baylor and vocalist Gene Baylor, the duo who are the Baylor Project with Only Believe, from their 2021 release, Generations on Be a Light Records. The piece features vocalist Jameson Ross. The four-time Grammy-nominated group recently signed with the record label Motown Gospel. Quote, "This is the first time that Motown has collaborated with a label in this way, and the first time they have ever signed a jazz artist to the roster." As of December of last year, both Generations and the Baylor Project's debut release, The Journey, are available on all streaming platforms. And last week, the Baylor Project received an NAACP Image Award nomination in the Outstanding Jazz Album Vocal category for Generations. The 53rd annual NAACP Image Awards will take place on February 26 on BET. And we began with the composition Struggle from the 2021 release No Joke on ESP Disc by Arts for Art founder, performance artist, poet, and choreographer Patricia Nicholson and bassist William Parker. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with guitarist, composer, and educator Samuel Mershing. His fifth studio release is titled Ethereal Kinks and becomes available on February 18th. So thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. You wrote 11 compositions for Ethereal Kinks, with the average time for each one about 3.5 minutes. The listening time is under 40 minutes, which was great for me because I was doing some light housework while I was reviewing this. It was perfect. You didn't use standard jazz chord changes. And though each tune had a different tempo, you were really in a groove throughout this release. And in listening to it, I found elements of your 2013 release, Up, with its groovy nature, and elements of your 2015 release, Room 3, with its risk-taking. My question to you is, what went into this release that wasn't present in your first four releases?
So it was a completely different situation this time. It really grew in the pandemic. So I started recording myself. And, you know, I, as you probably know, I played most of the instruments on most of the tracks. I played bass, drums, guitar, some synthesizers too. And I had some guests, but it was all really kind of not a full band setting. It was like layered. So that was definitely a different experience. Because you really kind of had to produce, or I had to produce it like more like a pop tune or something like that. So you go to the studio and you layer everything instead of having a full band playing it at the same time.
Yeah. And if you could just explain that, because I read it a few times and I wasn't sure. So you played on each tune, but you had two different people playing on each tune, except for one tune.
It's I only have four guests who played exactly four tracks. So the first track, for example, I had Renda Victoria Jackson playing bass. So what I would do is I would basically record the guitar with a metronome. I would play the bass behind it in a second run. And I don't piece this together like a collage. I play full tunes through. So I play the whole thing and then I play the whole bass. I recorded the drums with it. And then I send it to her both with and without bass. And she recorded it from her home in Maryland. She just added the bass. And then I fit it into the mix later. Then sometimes I did some retouching. I played the guitar again, or I played the drums again to make it kind of give it a little bit of interaction, because mm-hmm. I already heard her and so on. So it's going back and forth. It's really more of a kind of a ping pong situation. And then for other tracks, I played everything. For example, Indigenous, that was the first single that came out. I played drums, guitar, and bass all myself. So I just had to layer it. And that's how we usually did it.
So did you pay yourself each time you played?
Yeah, I made a lot of money on this track.
In reading about you, Samuel, you were nestled in the UK jazz scene. And then in 2013, you moved to Chicago, Illinois. What motivated you to move?
So I studied in Switzerland at a jazz school. I did my master's degree there. And then I had, I received this grant money that they gave me to go study abroad, or to, you know, like spend it for private lessons, but I would have to spend it somewhere abroad. And I actually had a friend from Ireland, from Cork, that I knew that studied at DePaul in Chicago. And I just went to go visit him first, and I just discovered how wonderful Chicago was. It was just a lot of wonderful musicians and just a very cool scene. I went back, organized an artist visa, and then moved to Chicago. I've been here ever since, so I think it's the 10th year I'm here right now.
And you must be loving the cold.
Oh, the cold is lovely. It's actually a lot colder than Switzerland, and it deals with quite a little bit of snow right now as well. It's really nice in summer, and in winter, it's really nice to practice.
Mention a few of the friendships you've established since moving to Chicago.
So two of my oldest friends here are on the record, actually. Reuben Gingrich, the drummer, and Jeremiah Hunt, the bassist for the track Winamac. And I probably started playing with them in 2013. And we just on and off played in different projects. We played hundreds of gigs in completely different situations, sometimes with one of them, sometimes with both of them. And we kind of grew into the Chicago scene together in a way.
Mm-hmm. And the late drummer, Rusty Jones, I had never heard of him. Was he a friend as well as a bandmate?
Yes. So Rusty, he was, I think when I first met him, it was 70. And he was just this guy. We would go to jam sessions almost every day here. And he would just, in his late age, he would come to jam sessions and stay until the end, 3 a.m. every, you know, like Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever. So he was just really active. And he had this, obviously, he played with a lot of musicians that were in their 50s and 60s because he was in the scene so long. He was kind of like a father of the scene here. But he loved to play with younger musicians, and he had this modern touch. So he was not quite bebop. He was like in the 60s and 70s where he was young. And you can really hear that he is basically more modern than most people that study jazz these days, because we always have this bebop approach. And he was just, when he grew up, it was just, that was just over. So that was just the past for him. So it's always something that sounded incredibly modern about him and was just so uplifting playing with him.
Let's talk about your setup. So you've got a guitar and you do some electronics, but could you explain what was your setup for this release?
So it's funny. Usually you go to a studio and you have all these expensive mics and amps and everything. And my goal was actually the opposite. It's just like, how virtual can I make this? So it's literally DI. Everything is computer. I mean, I play bass, I play the guitar, but I create all the sounds, the reamping and everything, the mixing obviously, is all in the computer. Drums that I play is an electric kit. So it's basically like an electric keyboard just on drums. And I trigger the sounds in a software that then gives me drum sounds that are actually recorded someplace else. So it's actual drum samples, but everything's triggered. So it's basically a virtual album.
Did you have to learn all this on the job, or do you have some sound engineering in your background?
I have no engineering background. I've been to the studio many times and, you know, I picked up a few things, but that's basically what I did during the first year of the pandemic, is reading a couple of books and spending a couple of hours each day to learn that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And the goal here was really not to make it a crazy sounding electronic thing. My goal was actually that it sounds like we would have been, you know, like we would have gone in the studio and recorded it and make it sound more acoustic and more natural and not really crazy, which is a completely different thing that's probably going to be happening on my next album.
Well, you've joined a group of other musicians who have done the same thing. They have had to produce a release with other musicians from around the country and around the world doing what you've done, putting it together in a studio, whether it's your bedroom or, you know, the basement or somewhere other than a studio.
Exactly. And this is kind of the only thing that is missing on the album, and I miss when I listen to the album, is obviously the human interaction. Mm-hmm. I get definitely, you know, the fact that I do a lot just myself, that's a whole monologue, right? But as soon as you throw somebody else in a mix, it's going to be a little bit more of a conversation, a dialogue, but it's never the same as being in the same room and creating it at the moment, of course. So that I couldn't reproduce. And really, you can hear, you mentioned the tracks are fairly short. I didn't feel like playing an 11-minute solo, you know, kind of like with a can. So I just kept them short. Just because that's, you know, the inspiration I felt at the time is like, okay, I'm not going to just make this huge monologue. So that's why everything is fairly short. Live stuff will be different, obviously.
In an interview with the Sound Bend Tribune in 2014, you stated that a good way to avoid cliches on the guitar is to listen to other instruments. Almost 8 years later, what instruments are you drawing inspiration from?
That's a great question. It's still different instruments than the guitar. I still love to listen to saxes and keyboard players. And then in the pandemic specifically, it was a pretty strong ego thing. So it was all about me playing the other instruments and my own personal isolation, just kind of throwing me back to, you know, being less influenced by other, even playing less with other people, and just do it all by yourself. I grew up in a pretty isolated town close to the Alps in Switzerland, and there were no other musicians in my town. So when I started listening to Coltrane, I had nothing but the metronome to play with. It was just me. And it kind of was a throwback to that time. It was just all me. So it could be a little bit egotistical, maybe, but it's also an interesting time of introspectiveness, I guess. In terms of compositions, you will definitely hear German composer Paul Hindemith, and the vibes are sometimes inspired by Jeff Parker. One piece I remember writing right after I heard a live show by Carolyn Davis. She did this beautiful ending, and I was like, I gotta do something like that. In terms of who influences my guitar playing, you will hear some John Stoll and Greg Tui, and for the bluesy stuff, probably some Albert King. And if you really go digging in the lines, you'll find some Bach and Hindemith as well.
Well, Samuel, we're coming to the end of this interview, and I wanted to let you have the last word. Is there something I didn't ask you? Something you'd like to tell us, an upcoming project that you'd like us to be on the lookout for?
Actually, just really the release that's on February 18. You probably already mentioned that. Thank you so much for having me, though. And you know, I'm really glad to be on your show. And thank you so much for your research. You really dug deep there.
Thank you. For more information, samuelmershing.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.